Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, my name's Nick.
Hello, I'm Woogie.
We are the Mouth of Manliness. This is a podcast all about mental health. But it's not just mental health. It's kind of about people's lives and about how they cope and how they manage in the world.
Yeah, and digging into the stories that make them who they are.
Yeah, so it's real life stories where we talk about things that people have been through and how they've managed and how they've coped and how they've come out the other side. So sometimes it's just me and Woogie here, but more often than not, we're talking to guests, sometimes more well-known guests, but more often than anything, it's just normal people who have been through interesting situations.
Yeah, and they've all got a lovely story to tell.
Yeah, so Mouth of Manliness, we are about mental health, but we're more about people and stories.
So, welcome to the Mouth.
The Mouth of Manliness. Welcome to the Mouth of Manliness. It's Thursday night. You'll be listening to this on Tuesday morning. I'm feeling good today. I've had a good day today. I'm feeling very positive after having a load of shit days. Today was a good one. And yeah, I'm Nick. Sorry, there's another person who presents this show, and his name's Woogie.
Hello, hello. How's it going? Are we all right? Good to see you, Nick. It's been a little minute, isn't it?
Yeah, we haven't seen each other much lately, have we?
No, mate. No, too busy. But never mind. We're in the perfect space with our lovely guest.
With our lovely guest, Roxley from Australia. How you doing?
Yo, how you going? I'm good, fellas. Thanks for having me.
No, oh,
it's a pleasure,
mate.
It's a pleasure. So, we kind of had a bit of back and forth trying to sort this out, and then you said that you could do it, but it would mean getting up at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And you did it. It's 4 o'clock, half four, is it there?
Yeah, it's half past four here in Australia on Friday morning. And we're doing it. We're doing it. We're making it happen.
Yeah, we made it happen, mate. Yeah, I respect you for doing it. I really do. So whereabouts are you?
Yeah.
Whereabouts in Oz?
I'm on the Gold Coast.
Sweet.
What's on the Gold Coast? Where's the Barrier Reef? Is that over that way?
Yeah, a bit further north, but yeah, in Queensland. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, we got lots of sunshine and good beaches and and heaps of stuff. We're going surfing on Saturday, and it's just a great place to live. I never thought I'd ever live up here, but I'm so pumped. My girlfriend actually thought that she had to convince me that I needed to move here, but we live 200 meters from the beach. Like, there wasn't much convincing that was needed.
Oh, man.
Oh, really? Where were you before?
Such a beautiful thing.
I've been all over the place, man. And I guess with my being in the army, I sort of moved every year. So I spent a lot of time in freezing cold Victoria. I was down in Melbourne before that and grew up in New South Wales. I was a country boy. So I was from a little town in New South Wales originally. And yeah, certainly didn't think that I was ever going to end up on the Gold Coast beach. So yeah, but here we are.
Nice.
It's nice that life works out sometimes, isn't it? It's the way.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. I'm compelled to live by the sea at all times. I spent there's a little place in Essex called Leon Sea, which is close to Southend, which is like not the greatest place in the world. It's like amusements and, you know, heroin and all that sort of shit. but Leon Sea was kind of a nice little move. That was my retreat out of London today, man. I can't get enough of it first thing in the morning. It's the best. Really is.
My missus keeps talking Amazing. About moving to the somewhere by the sea. Where? I always go to the sea. I do find the sea really relaxing. But I think partly because of my mental health, I need to know where I need everything in place and I need to know where everything is. And it does kind of keep me local. But I kind of quite like that. I do. So, Roxley, I wanted to talk about, so what was your reason for coming on here? You did a song that was kind of proper about mental health, didn't you? About men, especially.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so I released, well, it was my first song, Be Your Own King, and it's all about like learning to love yourself and looking after yourself as a man. I found that really challenging and I didn't really know that like you could actually do that for yourself. Was always out there just trying to achieve goals and forge ahead and do all the stuff. And I didn't really know that like as men that we could like actually like take care of ourselves and be kind to ourselves. And so, I kind of had this big realization and I just wanted other men to know that they can do that for themselves as well. Cause I think it's really important.
We're all in the same gang, aren't we? I totally agree. So, I'm kind of interested about how did you come to that point? What you said you had a realization. What was the realization?
I went on a men's retreat. It was called Sharpen the Spear, and we went out and we did a bunch of amazing processes and we're out in nature and everything. And we did this one breath work session. And it just kind of blew my mind. I sort of got to experience how unkind I was to myself. And the only way that I can sort of explain it is like I tortured myself, that I was like really kind and really accepting and like would do everything for everyone else. But I just really got the for me towards myself that I was torturing myself, that I was really unkind, that I didn't like a lot of things about myself and that I tried to hide it all and kind of suppress it and keep it all down. And I ended up like getting really emotionally moved and ended up sort of like crying and being supported by all the men around me, which is amazing. I think it was the perfect place for that to happen really. Mm-hmm. But I was just ended up getting really humbled by that and humbled by how I was to myself and kind of making an ode to myself not to treat me like that anymore. And I sort of like took myself out and like actually kind of like looked after myself and probably for the first time kind of asked myself what I needed. Mm. And it's changed everything about my life. And so I'm so glad that I was able to come to that realization. And when I was looking at finishing up in the army and becoming a music artist, I was like, this is the message that I want to put out there to people. And I thought a song would be a great way to communicate it.
That's really inspiring, Ben. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. That's totally cool.
Yeah. I'm not sure about, obviously we'll go into it, but like to arrive at a point where, were you sort of surrounded by a very sort of, you know, atypical masculine macho environment as well, which where people clamber up and don't want to be open?
Yeah, I was thinking in the army, like there must, like I kind of assume it's very kind of macho. And then often I've been to Australia and I felt like the men were very manly as well. Like I felt a bit uncomfortable because I'm not that way. And so I was thinking that for you, like, was that your experience anyway?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, that was the army experience sort of was a lot about sort of beating your chest and pretending that you're okay and just like muscling through it and not communicating how you were actually doing, just like just charging ahead, which is a fine system. I really see that it works. But yeah, you fall apart. Like at some stage you have to, you kind of have to let go and let people support you. And it's in those macho environments, it's not always super supportive and super collaborative. And it's sometimes not the place to ask for assistance, or people don't perceive that they can. But yeah, it's amazing what happens when you allow people to contribute to you. And yeah.
It is amazing, isn't it? Like, you think, oh, like, you suddenly realise there's this whole other world, and that people are actually pretty all right about these things. You know, once you start talking, it's all right.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Once you're cool about it and you open the space, like, people will just jump straight in. I think everyone is out there craving it, craving those deep conversations.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's interesting for me. Like, I've had... Like I suffer from anxiety quite a lot because of similar to what you said in terms of like you treat others like really, really well. Like I was in relationships where you treat people really, really well, and like throughout my life, and often sort of forgetting that your own mental health needs to be sort of catered for, but more than you need support in and I find support in friends, like I always have done, you know, that sort of like ability to, I mean, it's not even just like going down the pub and having a beer and like really like getting things off your chest or like moaning about your partners or other friends that piss you off or whatever. It's actually having like taking a time to sort of go for a walk with a friend who happens to be male that you're comfortable to just say everything you need to say and not be criticized or judged or made to feel like, it to emasculate you, you know, like because I think there's I've experienced friends that just clamber up, they won't talk, and if you talk about it, they're like, oh, well, you know, stiff up a lip, boy, sort of thing, and it's like that doesn't fucking work. Like you need to, you know what I mean? We're human, like we're tactile beings. We like to be hugged and told it's all right, and that comes from our parents, but it doesn't necessarily mean it doesn't have to come from our friends. Like, you know, I've got good solid friends in my life that. If I need a hug, man, they're going to give me a hug and be like, it's okay, buddy. Like, breathe deep, you know, look after yourself and tell you, advise you, help you. And it's, yeah, there's a lot of toxic masculinity.
It's funny. What you say is like, often people don't get that from their, they don't necessarily get that from their family or especially from their dad. Like, I didn't get that from my dad. And that's the important bit is that you're kind of modeled. Shown how to do it by your dad, but like, you know, men, especially that generation, don't do it. No. So I'm interested, Roxley, what took you to the army?
I think what took me to the army initially was probably my self-doubt and that I related to myself, that I was sort of like that I had something to prove, that I was a small person. I really see that I had this story that I wasn't very big, like physically, and like my presence and stuff wasn't very big. So I ended up getting into the gym and trying to put on a bunch of like muscle and going out there. And I did everything that I felt like I could, like I bought a big car and I feel like I had to communicate to the world, like tell people, no, I'm not this little guy that you think I am. I'm this big guy and I'm out there. And I like got into firefighting and stuff like that as well. But like, that was only me that related to me like that. And I was out here trying to convince the world, but like I'm 6'4" and like, I've always been a big guy, but it was just like my internal belief that I felt like I had something to prove to people. And so, yeah, that's why I joined, when I truly like look back and I truly understand my motivation was because that I had something to prove to people and be like, look how tough I am, look how big I am, I'm out here doing this thing. And and really, like, it just came from an insecurity about how people perceive me in the world.
Oh, that's so cool. I mean, I think to myself how much of my life has been dictated to by my insecurities. And it's like, it's most of it, if I'm honest.
Yeah, me too.
And it's really hard to look back on your life and, you know, those big decisions and you think, oh, I made it because I was insecure. You know what? You saying that was really lovely. It really was, because people don't say it. You know, they're afraid to say that. And that touched me because I'm exactly the same. Not so much now, but it's never a truer word said. Mm. Your insecurities. So what was it like? Where do you, have you made sense of those insecurities? Like where that came from?
Yeah, now I have. And sort of like you were saying there, I really get to accept that that was a part of my life, but that's not part of who I am now. That was kind of like my old self and someone that I was previously. And so I feel in like a completely different space to that now. But yeah, I think sort of growing up, it's hard to sort of identify exactly where your insecurities come from, but I just always felt like I was separate, and I was so worried about judgment of other people that I just wouldn't express myself, and I didn't know how to be myself. Mm. And so I tried to keep the mask on, and I tried to sort of be someone that I thought everyone would like. And so I did a lot of like people pleasing, and I did a lot of like kind of like chameleon stuff where I'd be like funny with the funny people, or I don't know. I just tried to be all everyone else except myself. And what I really have come to now is that I can just truly, truly be me in all situations. And it's so freeing because you don't have to juggle all of these different types of you, all these different personalities. You just get to rock up into a situation and just be yourself, which is like so liberating.
Yeah. I got to a point when there's a bit of like, you get this kind of fuck you attitude where it's like, no, I'm not going to be that person. I'm not going to pretend. I am going to be who I am. Mm. And like, you know, I've learned the lesson, and I'm not going to be embarrassed about it. You know, I'm going to say it.
It's funny because I find that chameleon thing like real simonious with being unhappy, right? Like it's in a situation I was in, like with my family and stuff, it was like, I had to pretend to be this sort of person around other people when actually I was miserable and doing all sorts of shit to make myself happy, you know. And it didn't do me any favors at all. It's funny that when I found absolute happiness, it was when I was fully comfortable with my decisions, my actions as well, I think, right? Most importantly, because I've behaved in that chameleon manner, as you were saying. It's like, it forces you to sort of do things you wouldn't necessarily normally do, and yeah. I've got like a destructive vein in me, so to say. On that, I do like some pretty shitty things, like to not necessarily directly to people I loved, but that would destroy a situation, you know. That in itself is again just because you're trying to be something you're not, and it's weird. Like it's weird how that when you see yourself in a different light and you're accepting of all of the shit you've done as well, and not just, it's not really about anybody else other than you, is it? It's like coming to terms with everything, being like, I'm allowed to be who I am. I'm allowed to do stupid things. I'm allowed to be horrible sometimes. I'm allowed to cry. I'm allowed to want people. I'm allowed to want to be loved. Mm. Right? Like, because again, that's a real strong thing about, like, I'm a firm believer in you should get back what you give, actually.
It's quite hard. The problem that's quite scary, isn't it? Like,
yes,
that,
massively.
Like, letting go of all the things that have kind of made you and driven you for, like, 90% of your life, and then you go, no, I'm not going to do it anymore. It means you've kind of got to learn again, and it's quite scary. But it's normally the best decision you ever make. So, Broxley, what took you? Like, were you unhappy? Like, before?
Before the coming out and...
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I felt so trapped. I guess, like I was saying, I really identified that I joined the army for a reason that I probably wasn't, from an insecurity, and it wasn't who I wanted to be, but unfortunately I'd signed up for 6 years at that point. Man. And so I'd already done my training, and I didn't really get a choice. So, which was probably one of the hardest things that I'd ever dealt with in my life up until that point. 'Cause
oh, wow.
I was very much a sort of cut and run guy before that. Like if something wasn't working out for me, I was happy to like cut and run and move on to the next thing. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be like, all right, sweet, this sucks. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm ready to leave. And I couldn't. And I guess that was a challenge for me, that I had to really turn my whole being and my whole mindset around, because I couldn't run. And I had to turn up every day, and I had to do the thing. And it took a lot for me to be okay doing that. But I'm really glad that I did, because yeah, who I am now is a different person, because I know that like it's up here in my mind, and I know that I can work through anything, and I can get up every day knowing that I can contribute and that I can be powerful in whatever life situation is happening to me.
That level of discipline is like just amazing to me. I've got to be honest, just to cut in, like that, knowing that it's like waking up every day. I mean, I can only liken it to sort of, you know, like when you land a new job, and this is my own experience, and then you get that to a job and you're like, fuck, I wish I didn't take this job. And then every day you get that guttural, horrible thing in your stomach.
Yeah.
So like for you to say to me that you felt that, well, I'm not, you know, presumably like something along those lines initially, to then do 6 years in that, and to, I mean, that would condition your very being, right? So, I mean, it must make you so fucking strong. Jesus, man. Like, I applaud you for that, dude. Like, ridiculous.
Thanks, man.
That's what I was going to say. I needed to clarify then that you'd had that realisation like when you started in the army, and then you were like, oh, fuck, I've got to do it.
Yeah. Fucking hell.
Fuck.
Yeah, dude. It's a big thing. It's a big thing. Like, I mean, how old are you at that point?
Probably like 20, 26 or right. 27. Right. Yeah.
Substantial. It's just like it's a key time in your life, right, as well.
So yeah, totally. Yeah. And like as an officer as well, I found it kind of like also hard to be standing up in front of people and leading people as well.
Yes.
Yeah,
man.
So
it's in-
yeah, it's sort of like, oh, I was just gonna say, like putting like dealing with your own internal experiences, but then also being in front of people and leading people and communicating and like projecting yourself out. That was really challenging, like sort of dealing with your own like insecurity and worry and dread and all of that, but then being someone for people that they can rely on and that they can that you're their rock that's like getting them through their experience. So yeah.
So was it like you kind of knew that, like, I might be a bit strong with this, but was it almost like you're kind of telling them to do things and you know it's like it's all not what really matters, kind of thing? Do you know what I mean? So you're doing it because you're teaching, you know, telling people for the sake of the army, but it's not what you really felt. That's why I was like, fucking hell, that's intense.
Yeah, that's definitely my experience. And especially I was like a recruit instructor, a platoon commander of all the new recruits as they come into the army, and I found that job quite hard, because I was sort of shaping these people that were coming into this organization that I was struggling with, that I was finding it really hard in, and I just found that challenging.
So I'm obsessed with Stanley Kubrick, and this week I've been obsessed with I have obsessions. My brain is ridiculous. So this week I have been obsessed with Full Metal Jacket.
That film, man. Such a good film. Oh, and God.
Obviously, so when you're talking about what you were doing, I'm seeing you as the drill instructor. You know, like, is that way off? Am I way off?
Well, that's not too far from the truth. I mean,
So you've got to be
right. It's hard, isn't it? Because you're responsible for, as you said, shaping an individual.
You don't want to let people down, because like their experience, they might be really into it, you know, and
100%. Yeah.
So you don't want to let them down in the same regard.
No.
So you've got to do it well, but it's kicking you up the arse the whole time.
So yeah, what I was going to ask though, so within that time, like, what were the positives? Like, what did you take away from it? Like, was there any like form of like, I don't know, camaraderie that was sort of a kind of a special unit between people, or like, did you see any of that within that experience or not?
Yeah, 100%. And that's part of the other reason why I joined as well, is that I was looking for that camaraderie. I was looking for a bunch of brothers and sisters to be there to really have my back. And I guess my experience before then, because I sort of have flipped. I was a musician before I joined the army, and that's what I wanted to do. But I had this falling out with a close friend, and I was like, no, I need this camaraderie. I need these people to have my back. And my experience was that I didn't have that with the people that were in my life at the moment. So I joined the army, and I sold all my music gear, and I was like, no, that's it, that's in the past, I'm not doing that anymore. And I just charged forward in this thing, and the crazy thing was that I actually did experience that camaraderie. But I came back around full circle again, where I was like, this is not who I want to be, and this is not what I want to do. And the music was just like tugging at me the whole time, being like, come back, you've got to pursue this. And I have wanted to for so long, but I was saying, I was in there for 6 years, and I signed up for 6 years, so I had to complete it, and I had to fulfill on the obligation that I'd said that I'd do. And so I had to wait till I was done to fully get back into the music stuff again. But I really see that you can get camaraderie, and you can get those brothers to be a part of your life anywhere. And like, that's a part of that men's retreat. And the facilitators and the men that I met through that was the first time I'd felt that real tribe mentality, like you were saying, with your close friends and stuff like that, where men hug each other, when you actually like truly like can hug these other men and stuff. I didn't know that men hugged. I was like, whoa, but it's amazing when you can be like that open with men. And so, that was my experience with that. And I'm so glad that I found that, because I've been searching for that for so long.
And I think that form of like, I mean, like brotherhood is like, I liken it to, I was an only child for 10 years. Then I had a sister, and I had lots of school friends, but I never had like, I don't know, like we had like a clique of like five of us in school that we were kind of a bit nerdy, but we got on with the cool kids. And it was that sort of way, sort of like in East London, like it was a bit shitty, but like, you know, a shitty area, but it was, we made the best of it. But then when you grow up and like you're sort of going different ways and stuff, it's my only time again for that was in music and like touring and having like a tour party and like people in it. And you feel like, you know, motorcycle club, you feel like, you know, felt like Black River Motorcycle Club, like, but you're like, you know, that you feel like when you're in a band, you're sort of,
shared sense of purpose, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's a shared sense of purpose, but also they've got you.
And that, if you can trust them and you've got a shared sense of purpose, then you've got it, bang on. I've never experienced that.
Have you not?
No.
It's interesting with, like, because, like, I've got, I don't know, it must be very fortunate, and I'm sure you have too, Roxy, is like, now, like, that when you get a group of, like, males that aren't like the expected response to sort of like when you share an emotional story and they don't just respond in like the textbook way, it's really refreshing to meet people like that, isn't it? You know, and it goes beyond just someone sort of sticking up for you in a fight in a bar. It's someone that which is like the atypical thing in London, and it's like, oh well, you know, he's my mate, blah blah blah. But you know, the consoling thing is something that I think in terms of sort of men's mental health, especially in the UK, has been so prevalent in trying to sort of encourage. And it's like, it's just really nice to have friends. It doesn't have to be another man, but even if it's like a female or whoever else, you know, that you can relate to and have a relationship where you can just be yourself and they tell you what they honestly think, it does wonders for you. Like, because again, there's no facade, is there? And it's and then you feel, but then you do feel strength in numbers. You know?
I'm interested though, is that sometimes you can, like if you've got friends who are female, you can almost get that a bit, you know, and then you kind of feel that kind of openness.
Yeah, I've always had a lot of female friends, to be fair, and that's, and it's, And like with when I've sat sort of when I grew up, my dad was at work. I had a great childhood, to be fair, but my dad was out a lot. He was a football manager, so he played a game on a Wednesday night and a Saturday night, and then Tuesdays and Thursdays he had training. So I was with my mum quite a lot, and I was like the boy that sat with a group of women discussing their weight and their issues and blah blah blah. Right. So I become it did That's wonders awesome. For me to be able to talk to women, right? But also to lose that sort of the masculinity that isn't necessarily. It's just not a positive, is it? And it made me see that nature in other people in a negative way. Actually, I've got two daughters, and it's definitely enabled me to be just totally open about, I don't know, like with all of my sort of emotions and stuff with people. I think it's quite a nice thing. I was just going to ask how you ended up getting to the retreat.
What was
your journey? That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, was how that? Like, at what point in the timeline was that? Was that before or after the army?
That was while I was still in. And it actually, like, I had a bit of resistance to doing that. Like, I remember the guy that was sort of asking me to be a part of it. Mm. He's like, yeah, it's $500. And I was like, whoa okay.
Yeah.
$500, man.
It's like a holiday, isn't it, I guess?
Yeah, but I wasn't comfortable spending that much money on myself, like, right. Or like to look after myself. Like, I'd never spent that much money just on like me, like looking after me. Like, I'd spent like money on like a motorbike, or I'd spent money on like a something else, like a physical thing, but I'd never like spent that money to look after myself and to like do something that was really gonna like assist me to be closer to myself. So I had a lot of resistance, and I had to have a really big conversation with this guy about that, because but eventually I worked through it, and ended up being one of the best things that I'd ever done, because I just got to experience that true closeness that you were sort of talking about before. And I don't know what your guys' experience like is in the UK, but we have like a kind of like tall poppy, like piss taking culture as well. Around men. It's like everyone's taking the piss out of each other and everyone's having a laugh all the time, which is amazing, because that's so fun. Like having a laugh and taking
the piss out
of people is so much fun, but it just, there's no space for people to be able to communicate their actual thoughts and feelings and like what they're dealing with. Like, no one's stuff gets dealt with in those situations because everyone's too terrified that they're going to be torn to shreds.
But
very much like that. That's my experience of growing up.
There's always a butt of a joke, right? There's always one person that gets shit constantly. And that's not good for anybody. It's just not. You know, it's outward projection because someone else is either jealous of you.
Or nervous
because of who you are, and they need to knock you down in their own mind. And like, I've experienced that really recently, actually. And I won't go into detail about it because it was a bit too close to home. But like, it really fucked me off, because when you trust somebody as well, and then there's a constant sort of digging at your side. And it's like, I've had that, like, when I was younger, I was a bit bullied, you know, like I was a bit of a fat kid, and then I got super skinny, and then I got like loads of girls on me. But the guy that used to take the piss out of that then took it like that. Then, because I was super skinny and looked after myself, then I was like seen as, inverted commas, gay. He's like, it's like, I mean, I'm just never going to win with you, right? Because you're clearly just a dickhead. But like, it takes a while to realize that people are just jealous.
That's been my overriding experience of life, like feeling that all the time, you know, worrying that someone's going to take the piss. Like, I never used to really, I was always frightened of girls, but I think what I was most frightened of more than anything else was rejection, and then my friends taking the piss because I got rejected.
And kids are arseholes, right? Children, like, teenagers are just bastards. That's how it is. We are. And it unfortunately gives you your scruples at that point. And there's always one cocky fucker that sort of takes it that little bit too far.
That's what I was saying.
It scars you, though.
It does. That's what I was saying about that experience of brotherhood. Like, I've got friends who will probably say that we had that experience.
Yeah.
But I didn't have that experience. I had the experience of, I've got to play along, or if I'm like I'll get a shit or I'll get in first with the take the piss stuff.
Mm.
And all of the and I was sitting there feeling insecure, and I imagine other people probably were as well. And I was a cunt to people as well because I was insecure.
Mm.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that stuff never comes from feeling great, does it? Like
that person
that you were talking about there, Warren, like he's not feeling good about himself.
No,
taking the piss out of you for being this way, then being that way, then being like he's worried about like himself internally, like and that's where it's all coming from. Like
Yeah,
and it's a really sad place, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, totally. I think it comes from home, right? Like it comes from, you're like, what you see of how to act as a man or how to behave in front of women or whatever comes from what you see when you're a kid.
Yeah.
I had a really great relationship with my dad. He was working a lot, but he was also in the limelight a bit. So that gave, I mean, I've worked in music since I was like 16, 17, fortunately. I don't say I have a job, but that came from seeing a performer, right? And music has always been in my life and stuff.
Yeah,
and I'm so hella grateful for it. But then, the traits of like that overly macho situation. It's like I was never that as a kid, really. I was, and again, because I was more around my mum, so I was more effeminate. Actually, I care about things that I don't know. Like I'm particular about the certain aspects of like my possessions and pay attention to detail that maybe.
It's awesome.
Men, again, in inverted commas, don't. And I was always sort of ripped to shreds about that. Like my clothes were always a certain way. And if I got a mark on them when I was out, my friends would be like, why do you care? It's like, well, I just care. Like it's a little bit OCD maybe, but on a very, very, very minimal level. But like, and I think you are shaped and it's like you are what you're shown to a degree, right?
Yeah.
And I was always shown to sort of respect the difference. And again, from both my parents, actually, but like to respect like anyone else's sort of actions and to not really be horrible on your like as a default, right? But I think sadly some people just are brought up that way and that's what they see.
That
built-in defense mechanism, and it's really horrible, man. Like I see kids like on the bus and stuff occasionally like do it now, and you're just like, you can see that they're just these angry little souls that just need a hug, right? I mean, not to go like, not to sound trite about it, but it is kind of true, you know.
Going back to the retreat.
Yeah, totally. And I think
I
was just going to say, like, I think that sometimes comes back to like the best form of defense is an offense. And like those little kids in those situations, like they're just defending themselves, but really they're defending themselves by being aggressive to other people. And
yeah, for sure.
I think it's really sad. It is coming from a sad place.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Oh, it's very true. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I could be a cunt sometimes, and that was me. Like, as you say, I was being offensive, quite literally.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, you know, like about the fact that the retreat was $500. And in some ways, I think like therapy is quite expensive, and it's in some ways it's quite good that it's expensive because it means that you take it seriously and you don't want to waste your money. Yeah. So a retreat, if it's expensive, you're going to commit to it because you spent a lot of money.
It literally gives value.
Yeah. So you want to get the value out of it.
You do, yeah. Exactly.
And I think. Like, there's a lot to be said for that. Like, I think a lot of the times, you know, like, where you get free therapy, like, on the government, and people don't commit to it properly.
Yeah.
But if they were paying the money, then they probably would commit to it. And if you don't commit to it, then you won't learn anything.
No.
And it sounds like, for you, like, you're able to really commit to it. And that's what kind of brought about the change.
Mm. Oh, 100%. Yeah. Even the guy that facilitated the program, he was like, dude, he was like, you were all in from the start. He's like, as soon as you got there, he was like, you were in to every experience that you could have had on that. And sort of looking back, I was like, I was. And I was like, I'm so glad that I did that because I wouldn't have had the experience that I had without doing that. And it's so true what you say, like the amount of investment that you put in something into something is like how much you get out. And I think the financial investment was a factor in that, that I was like, yeah, I'm going to get everything that I can from that. And like, I'm still reaping the benefits from that experience now. And so it's paid for itself in my human experience, like so many times over.
It's such a beautiful thing, man. Like, it just is.
I'm quite jealous. I really want to do something like that. I'd like to do like a sweat lodges and all those kind of things. I'm going on at the weekend. I'm doing a flotation tank.
Oh yeah.
Yes, that's so good.
Yeah, nice, my wife got it for my birthday like last year, and we haven't been able to do it for lockdown. And I booked it. Finally booked it, and it is just like. To be honest, I don't want to go out to London on my own and do it, but like I know it will be a really good experience and it will be worth the effort.
Yeah, we're wicked.
So it's like, if I'm going to go, then I'm going to commit to it, you know? And if you don't commit to it, then you don't get nothing from it. People are surprised.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
Let's talk about you as a musician.
Yeah.
Let's delve into them where your creative streak started then.
Yeah.
You left the army. You've come out. You've had your retreat. Found yourself a little bit more, and you know what you want to do. So yeah, where did you get started?
Well, it's really been only sort of 3 months or so since I've been out and launched myself like as a music artist, and it was terrifying. Honestly, I still remember making my Facebook page for the first time and sending the invites to my army friends. I was like, holy shit. Like, I was like, these guys, exactly what we've been talking about. I was like, these guys are going to take the piss out of me. Like, who leaves the army and then becomes a music artist? Like, I was just, and because I was going under a different name as well, because I was really clear that I wanted to create a brand and I wanted to create an image and I wanted to create all of these things that stood on their own, not just as me, but as something that's separate.
Yeah.
I was like, these guys are going to think that I'm like, so many bad thoughts were going through my head about what these guys were going to say, guys and girls were going to say about me. But like, they were incredibly supportive of me, like getting out there as a musician and pursuing my dreams, because they were, they knew that my dream wasn't to be in the army for the rest of my life. And they knew that I wanted to be a musician and be creative and do exactly what I'm doing now. So they were so supportive, and it just blew my mind. Like, when you open yourself up and you share with people, like, you get a lot of love back, and it really shattered all of my expectations of what I thought was going to happen in that situation.
Yeah, you always assume the worst, don't you? And then people surprise you. They're actually really all right.
I think what people forget, though, is that, and well, maybe they don't, but like, and it's hard to stand up and perform and to be, and to literally to sort of put your heart on a page or your emotion onto like 4 or 5 minutes of music. Because it is, you are literally exposing you as an individual. And it's like, again, I relate it back to school. Like, I got bullied a bit and stuff, but the minute I stood on stage and sung a song, all the hard kids were like, you're all right, how's it going? Because they can't fucking do it, man.
Not
everyone can, mate. They can't. And that is where, that's where the strength comes in too, right? And it's because it is empowering, because then I think it takes that push-pull to realize that, fuck, I'm stood up here. Like, and you can give yourself a little pat, you know, and not in a narcissistic way, in a fuck, I'm able enough to do this. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's amazing. And I'm sure they were very and are very supportive of you. It's dope.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really see now, like, there's nothing narcissistic about it. It's like, give yourself that pat, man. Like, look after yourself. Like, appreciate yourself for standing up and doing that, because it really does take something.
Mate, and, it does. More power to you, bro. It's like, fucking.
My wife's always blown away that I could get up on stage and, like, I'll talk in front of hundreds of people and she can't do it.
Yeah.
And she finds it massively impressive. And I'm like,
yeah,
but it's funny because when I play in bands, I play the guitar. So the thought of getting up and singing, like, Warren and I recorded together, and I always shy away from singing, and because that seems too much, you know. I did sing in a band, and but like I deliberately didn't write any words. I deliberately I knew the hook, but that was it. And that was almost like by not, I didn't want to commit to it because it was too scary.
Honestly, like that's 100% my experience, is that I was a guitar player. Like I grew up playing guitar and was the fancy solo guy that it'd just be.
Yeah.
And I was like the wingman. I was like the guy that was hanging off the singer's shoulder, sort of playing the guitar. And like moving around in that army, all I wanted to do was just like write music with people. And so I'd get on every new town that I moved to. I'd be like, I just want to collaborate with people. I want to find these people. And I'd go out there and all of these collaborations just kept falling through and through and through. And like, I was trying to work with these singers and I just couldn't get anything to work. And I just got to the point where I was like, I'm going to have to learn to sing.
Yeah.
And it was this huge like hold, like a whole self-discovery process just to be able to do it. And it terrified the shit out of me. And it still terrifies me, but like I'm still working through it every day, and being able to write my own song and to sing on my own song, like still has been such like an achievement for me personally.
It's
and,
massive, mate.
I just, I think it's incredible because you are bearing your soul out there.
Yeah,
and like,
you are.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because like
Warren's been a singer for years.
I've been in a lot.
He always seems really confident, but I think he's quietly nervous. I've played with Warren.
I love being nervous.
And I think like Warren really throws himself into it. He's like a caged animal when he's playing. It's amazing to see it because it's such a release. But in some ways as well, like that's almost like you're grappling with the fear whilst you're doing it.
Yeah, I think there's always been a massive fuck you to the way I perform and I've done stuff, and what I was gonna say like is that it takes ages to sort of find your actual natural voice, like it doesn't. I don't sing. I mean, when I wanted to sort of sing a sweet song like in tune and stuff, it took me, I don't know, like a long time to find my actual voice to do that, because I was in punk bands where I can sing a tune, but really loud in a high register screaming, I can still hit all those notes. And it's all just about aggression and bar in my stomach, right? Yeah. But then when you want to sing a kind of sweet ballad for this girl that you love and stuff, and it's like, or even yourself, right? Because I've written some songs about sort of me and about like what like very, very personal details actually. And when you find how to do that, like it's amazing, man. Because it's like...
Yeah, that's fairly recent as well, Warren. Like, the stuff that we've done together, like you've gone, actually, now I want to sing it rather than shout it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, do it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, like and on that Bricks record, like I wrote a song because I'd split up with the mother of my children, and like I wrote this whole album of like self-hate, really. I was just in a right old spiral, but one of the songs was about my children and about actually that, you know, the good thing that come out of it is that I might have three, that it was basically called Stood Four, and it was like a countdown from 3, 4, 2, 1, and like finding me being like being very important for the other two, sort of thing. And and like how to sing that when the whole album was recorded me going it's quite hard, right? Because you need to figure it out. Then I went and made a pop album, and it's like with a load of other guys, and it's a real nice journey though, man. Because like if you write in different genres, like and I'm very impressionable. So like in terms of like by theme though, I think. So like I'll listen to like a load of grime music and a dark electronica when I'm making punk music, or I'll listen to loads of punk when I'm making electronica because I see the dark and light within them, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just I love those journeys, dude. And like I'm quite envious that you're into your journey, and you've got a tune out, and it's like you're going to be finding and making some absolute bangers, brother. I'm sure it's the way.
It's like, just to cut in.
Yeah,
I love the finding your voice. Like it's so often. Like, I've got my friend Jim. He's got a great voice, and I'm often like, "How did you find your voice?" And he was like, "Well, no one else was going to sing."
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I'm like, but how did you find that? You know, like that blows me away.
And like, I think it's crazy as kids because, like, I used to sing in punk bands and stuff like that for that reason. Like,
yeah,
in a small country town, there wasn't that many musicians. Like, you could count all the musicians on your hand, and you put together bands of people that were available, and you made these things. Like, I was in a punk band for a while with a drummer and a saxophone player, but I just wanted to play music. Like, there was no bass player, so like, you just do what there is. And there was no singer as well, so I was like, I'll sing. And I never had an issue doing it or showing up to do it. But like, sort of as time went on, all of those thoughts about, oh, I'm not very good at this. And no, literally no one said to me, you're bad at this, but it was just my internal dialogue that was like, this sucks and I'm not very good at this. So I stopped and I just started pursuing the guitar because that felt safe to me. Like, playing the guitar felt really safe. So I stopped singing. And so it's been really hard to sort of get back into it again now and be like, no, I'm going to do this. And the self-talk's still there.
Yeah.
But I just get to show up to it every day. Yeah, I appreciate you saying that about the journey, Warren, because, yeah, I really have to keep coming back to that it is about the journey and remembering to love the journey as well.
Dude, it's like,
that's so true.
Every time I start something, and like, I sort of mess about, like, I've recently got kind of a dream songwriting job recently, and it's like, I don't know how it happened. I kind of do, but, and it's like, you still have to retrain yourself no matter what you do, right? And it's like, and that is exciting as fuck, but like, it only comes from that first part of like knowing exactly who you are as an artist, because you can reinvent yourself like hundreds of times then. Once you know yourself, once you know yourself who you are, because you can always go back to that. Like, I can always go back to picking up a guitar and writing an album on my own in my bedroom like I did when I was 16. I can always go back to that. But I've got all this other cool shit. I've got Nick with like his 100 guitars and like 20 million pedals, and it can make some noises that you have never heard on a guitar. Do you know what I mean? But it takes relationships and getting, again, meeting your brothers to kind of get those introductions and be like, fuck, he can do that. And it's like, and again, the positivity in that exchange is that, because I'm a good guitarist, man, but like, I don't play guitar like Nick plays guitar. So we play
better than me.
No, but we play.
I'm really shit. I don't know any notes. I don't know notes and keys. But it's all played on emotion.
The beauty of it is, though, amazing, because of that reason, it means that working with people becomes just exciting, man. It's like, I hated being in bands when everyone was sort of looking over each other's shoulder going, oh, he's got a better guitar than me and he's a better guitarist than me.
Yeah, bands aren't good at talking, though. Do you find that? Like,
not good at being,
you know, brothers, like, you were saying, no one said you were bad, but no one ever says you're good either. Good. Unless, like, everyone in the band is like, right, I'm going to get behind this singer because we might get somewhere. So we'll tell him he's good. But apart from that, and then he's not going to tell you you're good because he don't want to fucking, you know, people think he's not good. Yeah, I've always kind of really disappointed. It's different like now, but like for a lot of the time in music, people aren't actually all that nice to one another.
No,
and it's like, why? We should all be going, that's fucking amazing.
That is sort of an age thing at times, though.
Yeah,
I mean, because like I remember, that thing of like, the way to get good at music is to be in a room, right, with the people you love and trust when you're in your teens or your 20s or whatever, and then you drill it. You write five songs.
Get a lot
songs,
better like that, though.
You play five covers, and then you smash 10 songs of rehearsal. You all pay like, I don't know. 15 quid to do that, and you do that, and then you get really good, and you get to a gig, and again it just comes down to childhood jealousy, doesn't it? Because like, not childhood jealousy, but sort of like, you know, young adult, you sort of like, oh, they're a bit better than us, fucking hell, like they are a bit better than
and
us.
And then you're like, we've got to try really hard.
Yes, and I think that's sort of like a sink or swim mentality, though.
Yeah.
And like, actually, as you get older within music, like I went through a phase of like, when you went to a bar and there was musicians, I was a bit like, oh fuck, man, like I don't want to sit and watch musicians, dude, because I'm just going to become critical of people, whatever. Yeah. And I saw that as a really shitty trait in myself, actually, because like, they're really enjoying themselves.
Yeah.
And I feel like a cock, actually. So I stopped that and I started getting involved, like doing like bit of spoken word and stuff, and like doing, and just getting involved with things at like open mic nights and stuff, instead of trying to be a pretentious arsehole. And it's like, once you get past that, it's perfect. It's like, and again, you can find your brothers in it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's it, man.
Honestly, like, that That's like the only thing that's really allowed to pursue me to pursue my own songs and my own creativity is giving up judgment, of other people.
Yeah.
And like you're saying, like I don't judge any music anymore.
No.
Like I choose to see the positive in all music because I see that like I was exactly the same as that. I would be so negative and so critical of everyone else, but like being critical of everyone else means that then you open the door to be critical of yourself.
Exactly.
And I just saw that if anything that I created, I was so critical of myself. And but once I stopped being critical of everyone else, then like that channel wasn't open for me to be critical of myself. And the slate was like now clean to just create.
Yeah.
And oh, it was so freeing. Like,
that's mindfulness, isn't it? Like mindfulness is about being present and not being judgmental. So like you stop being judgmental of everyone else.
Yeah.
And then when you stop doing that, you stop being judgmental of yourself.
Yeah.
And it's like, fucking hell, how did that happen? And that is such a true thing. So did you do it? I want to know about the retreat a bit more because I want to go on one. I'm quite jealous. What other things did you do?
So we did... I don't know whether the guy will worry too much about me saying exactly the processes, but like we did a lot of stuff like we wrote like letters to ourselves about stuff that we wanted to like leave on the mountain and things like that, weights that we'd been carrying that we didn't want to carry anymore. And so we wrote them all down and we kept them. And then we got to the top of the mountain and we burnt them and we just let them all go. And we let the weights that had been sort of, that we'd been like lugging around for years. Like I really see that I'd been, a lot of the stuff that I'd written down there was a lot to do with my anxiety and my worry and my self-judgment and all of that. And I'd been carrying that around since I was a kid. And like, it sounds crazy to think that, like a process like that would actually work, but it does. Like the human mind's a powerful thing. And when we create a process around something that, and we truly get behind it, a lot of the times it works. Like, so it was, sort of blew my mind.
It's kind of like, it's all symbolism, isn't it? So it's like, people get that from religion because they get all the symbolism, but what it does, it doesn't talk about you. It talks about outside. So in reality, this is why I kind of am quite interested in like more spiritual things, because the more spiritual stuff is basically kind of what you're saying. I mean, when you're going, it's more about you, and it like not in a selfish way. If you're better, then you're better for everyone. You know, like if you're feeling you're better about yourself, then you're better for the next person you meet. You know,
no,
I really like that. I really like it.
I really like religion for that, for giving people purpose and drive and stuff. But something that one of my religious friends said to me when I brought this song out, Be Your Own King, and had it on a t-shirt, like people have been wearing Be Your Own King written on a t-shirt. And he said, I really like the song, man, but I could never wear the t-shirt because Jesus or the God's my only king or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, I get that, man, but... I get that, but I was like, I still think that every person should be their own king for themselves. And the thing that I struggle with is when that people put the God or the as an external thing. I think it's in here. I think that God essence, and I think all of that stuff is internal. Yeah, it's not separate from you. And when they say I can't be my own king because he's the king, it's like, nah, man, you're the sovereign. You're the one that owns who you are.
Yeah.
And yeah,
I agree
with you totally as well.
Like in antiquity, like before Christianity and before like organized religion, that's what they used to do.
Yeah,
they used to do that. Even paganism's about that. You know, like that is what we used to do, and we've been told not to.
No.
So
I couldn't agree with what you're saying anymore, and I like the idea of be your own king. I think the idea, it's not about being selfish, is it? It's about accepting that we need to kind of look after ourselves as well, so then we are better.
Self-love, man. It's isn't it?
Yeah. Bit of 100%.
You know, man.
See, yeah, it's about like having a full cup so that you can give people your overflow. And like in the army, like I just found that everyone, including myself, was operating like off empty cups. Like I was trying to get the dregs out of my cup. I was so tired and I was so undervalued and underappreciated and under everything that I had nothing in my cup. And I was trying to give stuff to other people out of my cup. And I was burrowing down deep in that thing to try and find some water. But like if I knew self-love then, and if I knew like self-acceptance and I could fill my own cup, then like the world would be a different place if people are giving each other the overflow rather than scraping deep in the bottom of their cups, just looking for some dregs of water.
I love that. Proper nugget. That is a proper little gem.
Sad little sample.
Oh, have you got any more gems for us, Roxley? Because we've done an hour and I want some more. I want to hear some more gems because I like that. And I totally agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, I just wanted to share one more process that we did on that thing on the retreat was a primal scream where we just got to like experience just like pure anger and just like let it out into nature. And and something that I thought was incredible before when Warren was talking about sort of having that feminine aspect to his masculinity. In that moment, I noticed that I'd been trying to like squash all my masculinity down to like just this tiny little this tiny little barrier where it's like I could be like a little bit excited or a little bit sad or a little bit angry or a little bit, and I was like trying to keep it. But like the male experience and the masculinity, like I want to be a full spectrum man and like feel all of the emotions up and down and go on that roller coaster. But I just noticed that, and I think it comes from like our parents and stuff as well. My dad was, he didn't express a lot of emotions. And I just grow up learning that men don't express emotions. And so I just tried to restrict everything into this small bandwidth. And I really got that I don't want to do that anymore, that I want to have the feminine aspects to my masculinity. And I want to be able to just be purely aggressive and just like true drive and true grit as a man as well, and not feel restricted in any way.
No, you don't need to. It's a good thing, man.
That's kind of that one's blowing me away a little bit. Fucking hell, you know. See, like I never let go of, like I get angry, but no one would ever know that I'm angry. Like over lockdown, I kind of lost my shit with my kid once, but I'm really quite placid, and I'm quite afraid of anger, and I don't really let anger. I don't feel like I've ever let anger out. I've never really Sometimes I feel so full of anger. Like I feel so full of anger all the time. And I've never felt like I've ever let it out because I've never done sport. You know, like I always thought that people release anger through sport and being competitive. And like, that shit's always scared me. So I've never let out anger. I don't know. You know what? If I was there, I would probably be screaming for hours and letting out every last bit. I've heard about that before, I've often thought like that would be really cathartic,
therapeutic. Dude,
it was my rehearsals, man. I told you.
I guess like it's people guttural, have said. Like, one of my friends said to me once. He said like when he's watched me playing a really crappy little gig, and he was like you were a different person, you were lost in it, and it's like and I'm really having it, and it's that rare opportunity to kind of like let it out, and I'm like I'm putting out being woken up at 5 o'clock in the morning by my kids in like last 10 years because I haven't done a gig, and it's like everything comes out. But more importantly, what I really liked, like more like the other part of what you said that I like touched me really was that, you know, like being the full spectrum, like, like if you are an angry bear of a man sometimes, like that's okay as well.
Yeah,
that's okay, yeah.
Like, I've not really,
makes me feel better.
Yeah, it's like that assumption that you shouldn't. Yeah. Like, if you do that, like for our generation, maybe when it's like, if you do that, then you're going to be like your dad, and
yeah, of course.
And it's like, no, sometimes that's okay as well.
Yeah,
for fucking hell, Rossi, you've had me about four times.
Done well there, mate.
That's awesome.
It really has.
But yeah, like, you know, our society, there's really not a lot of way to express that anger, but like, we're human beings, and especially as male human beings, like, we feel anger. Like, it's part of our DNA is to, like, when we're under attack or whatever, is to be angry and explosive and aggressive. But like, in society, we don't have a lot of place to get rid of that. And like, in other older societies and stuff, like in Japanese society or whatever, they had the screaming tree or whatever, and people could go to the screaming tree and just yell at it. But like, we don't really have that here, because we live in buildings and things, and like, you can't really just go and just yell at things. But I just think that would be so therapeutic to bring some of that part of that into our society, and whether we maybe like scream into a pillow or scream somewhere.
How do you do it now then? How do you do it now?
I find that my thing now is like going mountain bike riding, that's like my thing, where I'm just like out in nature, and like my expression, like, is not really like verbal a lot of the times. I really find like that I'm not like, I don't need to yell as much, but I need to like move my body, and I need to like, my aggressive thing is like aggressively hitting the mountain bike trail or something like that, or yeah, so that's my way of getting it out there. And I feel, because like, that's in nature and that's out there, that's cool. That it's received or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. That's like your hikes, Warren.
Yeah, man.
It's the same thing, isn't it?
It's getting rid of, like, because I go on like pack walk hikes with like 20k in a backpack. And I'll go for like anything between sort of 6 miles or 25 miles, depending on how fueled I am, basically. And I haven't done them for a bit because I'm so fucking busy, but I did one yesterday morning, actually, for the first time in a long time. And it's exactly that. You use, you're not looking at your phone, there's no one there, and you utilize that energy and you're fucked. But then you get to a point where all the endorphins kick in and you're like, and it's hard, and you get through it, and then the rest of the day is easy. And like, I love it.
Yeah.
And I've been sort of late. I mean, I've had a couple of beers now, but like, I've laid off the beer as well and stuff for a little while. And it's just
That's the sport thing, isn't it? That's why, like, because I'm getting really nervous around any kind of sport. Mm. Like, if someone puts a ball near me, I'm really nervous. Yeah. If I run, I feel so incredibly self-conscious that I just don't do it. And any of that stuff. And maybe that's what I need to do. Like, sometimes I might move around with a guitar, but that's about it.
Nah, mate, you'll come on some hikes with me. That's it.
Oh, God. It scares me that I'll let everyone down, but it also scares me that I'll hate it, because my experience of any kind of exercise is loathing, like mostly like self-loathing. Fucking hell, Roxley, you've really done me. You're gonna have to come back, because you've just made me. I've just had loads of little moments of self-realization.
That's a good thing, man.
And it's like,
yeah, dude, I love that. This conversation's been incredible.
Yeah, dude,
it's crazy, isn't it?
Let's plan for more in the future, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it again. Let's give it like 6 months. Come back in next season, and we'll see where you're at. Because I really enjoyed that.
I want to hear more about your musical journey, man. I want to see next singles. I want to know what's going on. So let's catch up in a bit. Yeah, let's do it. For sure.
How do people check you out then, mate?
Yeah, tell our listeners what's going on.
Yeah, dude, they can find me on Spotify or Facebook under Roxley Music, and Instagram as well. And
sweet.
I'll share everything when we release it. I'll share all that.
Yeah,
as well. So
we'll get all the ads, we'll get all the links, we'll make sure people find you, brother. And listen, just before we sign off,
I appreciate that so much.
No, yeah. Man, just before we sign off, I just want to say a massive, massive thank you again for signing on at 4:30.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Can't no believe worries, you. Guys. I really appreciate it, dude. Yeah. Maybe next time you can have the evening and we'll have the early morning.
Not that early. Jesus, man, I'm 45. I'm old.
That is not my problem.
Thank you, Roxy. I really enjoyed that, mate. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure, my brother.
Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks so much, fellas.
Cool, yeah?
Will do.
This is the mouth. This
is the. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.